Whitehall, 1212.
This is Scotland Yard.
For the first time in its history, Scotland Yard opens its official files to bring you the true stories of some of its most baffling cases.
These are the true stories. The plain, unvarnished facts, just as they occurred, reenacted for you by an all-British cast. Only the names of the participants have, for obvious reasons, been changed. The broadcasts are presented with the full cooperation of Scotland Yard.
Research for Whitehall 1212 is from Percy Hoskins, chief crime reporter of the London Daily Express. The stories for radio are written and directed by Willis Cooper. Here is Chief Superintendent John Davidson of Scotland Yard, custodian of the famous Black Museum.
The exhibit I have to show you today from our Black Museum files is neither more nor less unusual than anything I've shown you. But, like many other of these intrinsically unusual objects, it has acquired a certain interest because of its association. Now, you've seen thousands of these. It's a string of varicolored plastic beads made by cutting plastic tubes of various colors into short lengths and stringing them together to form a woman's necklace. The string has been broken, but it's been retied, you see. The man who tied it together is here beside me. He was in charge of the case number 696966. This is Detective Inspector Herbert Case of the CID. Herbert?
This case is one of the few in which the press was able to be of considerable assistance to us. Not, I assure you, by usurping the functions of the police, as so many fictional newspaper men do so fictionally successfully, but by passing on to us with remarkable celerity everything they discovered and leaving the dirty work to us whose job that is. I applaud such pressmen, as does every good policeman. On the 9th of August last year, the Criminal Investigation Department of Nottingham received a trunk telephone call from London. The call was routed to me. The caller identified himself.
John Marchbanks speaking.
Inspector Case here, Mr. Marchbanks.
Oh, yes, yes. Look here, old fella. I've had a telephone investigating.
Yes, sir?
A man's just called to tell me that he's willing to sell me for a considerable sum of money the exclusive first-hand story of a murder.
May I ask who you are, sir?
Oh, sorry. Yes, I'm editor of the News of the World in London. We've the largest circulation in Britain, you know.
I've seen your paper, sir.
Yes. Well, this chap told me that he had the story. Says you chaps don't know anything at all about it yet. So I thought I'd better notify you.
Oh, well, that's very good of you, sir. Did the man give his name?
Yes. I told him I'd have to consult my superiors and I'd ring him back at 12:25. He's at a telephone kiosk there and the number's 633191.
And his name?
Brown. George Brown, he said. Although I suspect that rather too easy, isn't it? Probably his nom de plume.
Are you going to talk to him at that number, sir?
At 12:25, I told him. Yes.
Thank you, sir. We'll be there with him. Goodbye. It was, of course, simple to determine the location of the telephone kiosk from the number. I proceeded there at once with Detective Sergeant Victor Mann. To find a young man with excessively long hair talking rapidly into the phone, we moved closer to listen as best we might through the closed door.
Now, nobody knows about it except Victor.
Would you say that's him, Inspector?
What, say to...
I expect you'd better find out, Sergeant.
Right, sir.
Well, £150, then. I need them...
Your name, George Brown?
Excuse me, there's...
I'll have that telephone, please.
Look here, who are you?
CRD cop, give us the phone. Hello, hello, are you there? Hang on a sec, please. This is the police. You want to talk, Inspector?
Look, I say...
Are you George Brown?
I am, I was...
It's him, Inspector.
Thank you. Just wait, you, Brown. Hello, is that Mr. Marchbanks? It is? Good. Was that your man? Right, we're here. We'll have a talk with them. Eh? Oh, yes, 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 yes. Of course, I'll remember. Thanks very much, sir. Now, Mr. Brown.
Who are you, the police?
We are. Not see our cards?
I was going to call you at once, officer, just as soon as I got finished with my London call.
I suppose you tell us now.
We're right here.
May I sit down, please?
On the bench there.
Leg feels better when I sit down.
What's the matter with your leg?
It's always been that way.
Sit down, Sergeant. Now, what's this, Brown, about the murder you know about?
Well, I don't know if it's a murder or not, sir.
You told the editor of the News of the World it's a murder.
Well, I think it's a murder.
Where?
It's in an old derelict orchard about half a mile from here, sir.
It's a woman, you told the editor?
Yes, sir, a woman.
Is the body still there?
Yes, sir. I'm sure nobody'd find it.
Why hasn't it been reported to the police?
Well, I found it just yesterday, you see, and I thought I'd try to make some money out of it before I told you chaps. Can't blame me for that, you know.
No, can't we?
Do you want to take us there?
Well, under the circumstances, sir, I suppose there's really no choice, is there?
There is not. Come along.
Mind my leg, will you, you great oaf.
I felt sorry for young George Brown as he limped along with us in the direction of his derelict orchard. Down Edwards Lane, past the Roxy Cinema and the Metropole Hotel, jabbering about his bad luck at every step.
How'd you chaps get on to me? I'd have stood to make £250 if you hadn't butted in.
£150, the bloke on the telephone was saying to you. Or you were saying to him, cock.
Well, £100 isn't hay, you know, to a fellow's out of work. Now I shall never see it, thanks to you.
Serves you right, trying to make fools of the police.
Well, I didn't make fools of you, mate.
Don't come a Gracie Fields on us.
How much further is this place, Brown?
Down the hill there. There's a path.
I don't see a path.
You'd never have found it. I'll show you. Here, see? It's all grown over, but there's your path.
Where's this body?
See down there, at the bottom?
That pile of rags?
It's her coat. Been thrown over her.
Who threw it over her?
How do I know? The murderer, very likely.
How'd you find her?
Oh, saw beads lying on the path here. Oh, I'd better give them to you, hadn't I?
You had.
Why, sorry, I forgot them. Here.
Better tie them together, hadn't I? How do you know they're hers?
I don't know. Seems probable, though, don't it?
We'll see. Well, come on.
Oh, I'm not going down there again. I've seen her.
Now, come on, pal.
No, I won't do it. It was tough enough climbing up and down yesterday with my leg. I'll stay here. You go on.
Too right you'll stay here. Shall I climb down, sir?
I'll go. You stay here with the prisoner.
Prisoner? I'm not arrested, am I?
You are now. I arrest you on the charge of willfully concealing evidence of a violent death, and I warn you that anything you say will be taken down in writing and may be used in evidence.
Satisfy your cook.
What are you going to do with me?
The body was that of a woman about 30, I judged, lying on her side, fully dressed, the coat carefully placed over her. There was no immediate means of identification, and the only obvious wounds were the bruises about the head, which had caused the face to become quite black. The body was removed to the mortuary at Leanside for examination by Dr. Crofton, the police surgeon, and by Dr. John Little of the Home Office Forensic Science Laboratory. Mann and I took Brown to a justice of the peace on the charge we had made of concealing evidence. He was allowed to go after he'd been bailed under the Criminal Justice Act of 1925, which permits the police to go bail themselves in such cases. In the meantime, a card found in a pocket of the coat, which had covered the body, had provided the first identification. The card bore the name of Mrs. Anne Battersby, of 97 Longmead Drive, Nottingham, who had been reported missing on Friday the 3rd of August, 6 days earlier. Lodgers at the Longmead Drive address identified the broken string of beads, the coat itself, and certain other articles as the missing Mrs. Battersby's. I talked with Sergeant Mann.
Yes, sir. That's who it was, all right. Miss Battersby woman. Body's been identified.
Who identified her?
Her husband and these other people, sir.
What about her husband?
Oh, I've talked to him, sir.
You all right?
Well, I brought him along with me, sir.
He here now?
Yes, sir.
Let's have a look at him.
Right, sir. Mr. Battersby?
Yeah?
Come in, please. Inspector Case, Mr. Battersby.
Sit down. Sit down, Mr. Battersby. I was wondering if you can tell us anything, sir.
I've tried to think. I can't imagine.
Your wife's acquaintances, is there anyone at all?
I don't know of any. The ones I know are other women. No woman did that, Inspector.
No. How do you account for her being found in that particular place, Mr. Battersby?
I don't know. Except it's near the Roxy Cinema. That's where she was going when she left. She told Tommy.
Tommy?
Thomasina Jane, our daughter. She was home when Anne left.
Where were you, Mr. Battersby?
At work.
What's your occupation?
Advertising copywriter.
For an advertising concern?
No, I'm self-employed. My office is in St. Peter's Gate.
I see. And when did you discover your wife missing on the 3rd?
She wasn't there when I came home. At 10 o'clock at night, I notified the police at once.
What time did you leave your office?
At about 9:30.
I see. Is that your usual leaving time, sir?
No.
What is your usual time?
About 5:30.
Uh-huh.
I was working that night on a new advertising campaign.
You could prove that, of course.
I'm afraid I can't. I was alone. I have no office employees, and I was quite startled when I realized how late it had got, and I hurried home.
When you found your wife absent, where did you think she was?
I didn't know. Tommy woke and said she'd gone to the cinema. I telephoned there, but there was no answer, and I called several of her friends.
Women friends?
Of course. Well, only one of them was at home, Danielle Dupuy, and she was...
What did you expect to find out, Mr. Battersby?
Why, poor Anne used once in a while to stay the night with Danielle.
Without leaving you a message?
Well, I thought she'd forgotten to call Tommy, or perhaps Tommy had been asleep and hadn't heard the telephone.
But your wife was not there?
No. Danielle said she'd seen her that afternoon.
Where?
Near the Roxy Cinema, about 4 o'clock.
And where were you at that time?
Why, I was in my office working.
Where you stayed all evening?
Of course.
Going without your dinner?
I'm afraid so.
But that you can't prove. Can you?
Look here, are you accusing me of my wife's death?
Not yet, sir. Now, let me tell you what Dr. Little, the Home Office pathologist, said to me. I called on him the next morning, the 9th, at his laboratory, where the body had been taken for a more complete examination. He'd been working most of the night, and he was tired.
Well, I've discovered several things, Herbert.
Any progress?
I let you decide. First, she's been dead for about a week. That, with the bruises on her face, which I think were made by someone's fist, accounts for the dark color of her skin.
Almost black.
Yes.
She was murdered about the time she disappeared, then.
I think I can say so.
How quickly would the discoloration set in?
Almost at once. A day or so, let's say. Oh, I can hardly keep my eyes open.
I'm sorry.
That's my job. Second, she died of strangulation, suffocation. I think, remembering the bruises, it was manual strangulation.
Yeah.
By the condition of the stomach contents, she died about 4 hours after her last meal.
Ah. We can discover when she ate last, then we'll know almost the exact time of her death.
The day and the time.
I'll try to find that out.
All right. Now, we used my little laboratory vacuum cleaner on her clothes.
What did you find?
Nothing much. Except these hairs. Longish.
Black?
Yes. Recognize them?
They're not her husband's. He's almost bald-headed. What hair he has is sandy.
Traces of grease on this.
Can it be identified, you suppose?
I doubt it. But we can compare it with samples of Brill cream and other messes people put on their hair and identify it that far.
Will you do that?
Of course. Probably the murderers.
I'm sure.
On here. This is what we found under her fingernails. Oh, excuse me.
More hair?
Shreds of fiber.
From her coat or dress?
From somebody else's coat or dress.
You think another woman, Doctor?
Can't tell. Bring me the garment she clawed these bits from, and I'll prove that's what they're from.
How?
Comparison microscope, my boy.
Ah.
I'd like to see those beads you were talking about, too. Sorry.
What for?
I want to see if they fit into these marks on her neck.
Marks?
I think the boil strangled her with her own beads. Now, do you mind clearing out and letting me get a few winks of sleep like a good man?
You going to sleep here?
Oh, the lady won't snore.
Leaving Dr. Little to his well-earned rest, I sought out Sergeant Mann for a conference. He listened attentively to my instructions.
All right, sir. I've got it all, I think.
The beads.
To take them to Dr. Little.
Right. Battersby.
Ask him for samples of his hair.
What else?
Look over his wardrobe and get samples of fibers from everything and bring them to the Forsenic Laboratory. Oh, yes. And find out from him how to reach the Stanil du Puy.
I admire your pronunciation, Sergeant.
Well, the girlfriend of Mrs. Battersby.
And ask her to come and see me.
Ask her?
Fetch her.
Hope she's pretty.
She's French.
Honi soit qui mal y pense.
What?
French, sir. I'll speak it like a native.
Well, try it on Mademoiselle Dupuy.
Try what, sir?
Get out of here. Send in that man that's waiting.
Man, sir?
The newspaper fellow.
Oh, the little fat man from London.
Send him in.
Yes, sir. You can come in, sir.
Oh, thank you. Excuse me. I am addressing Inspector Case, am I not?
You are, sir. I take it you're Mr. Marshbanks.
Well, off the News of the World, London. I was speaking to you yesterday, sir.
Very glad to see you, sir.
Oh, thank you. May I sit down?
By all means. Well, you uncovered a real one, Mr. Marshbanks. What brings you to Nottingham?
I came down to see this murder story merchant, Brown. He telephoned me again last night.
Oh, did he?
Tells me that you've arrested him.
I'll teach him to conceal evidence. He's on bail now, but he'll get sent down for a few months when his trial comes up. What did he tell you?
Tell me?
When he telephoned you.
Oh, well, I promised to give him £70 for his story. Provided you have no objections. It's our type of thing, after all, you know.
Come down on his price, hasn't he?
No, that was my doing. We're not in business for our health, you know. It's all right with you. Provided, of course, that I show you the story first.
I see no harm in it, as well.
Oh, good, good. Thank you. Ordinarily, I'd let our staff man here in Nottingham handle it, but I wanted to get away from my desk, and I confess this intrigues me.
Yeah.
I say, I was thinking of something. Can't put down an old newspaper man, can you, Constable?
Inspector?
Huh? Oh, I am sorry. Of course, Inspector. Write so many bloody things about constables in the paper, you know. I am sorry. Do forgive me.
What were you thinking of?
Oh, I was just thinking, what if this young chap turns out to be the murderer himself? Wouldn't that be jolly?
Would be quite interesting, Mr. Marshbanks.
I know what I should do.
What?
I should give him an extra £50. But only if his story is exclusive, sir. Only if it's exclusive, mind you.
You're very generous, sir.
It'll be worth it. Oh, it'll be worth it.
Well, sir, if I allow you to leave me upon your lawful occasions now, I trust you will leave me to mine.
Huh?
I shall see you again before the day is over, sir.
Oh, with my exclusive story, I promise you, sir. Good morning.
Before the day was over, I'd said, a great many things happened before that day was over. First, at about 3 p.m, Dr. Little telephoned me from his forensic laboratory.
Well, I had a good sleep, Chase.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, sir.
Until about an hour ago, when your sergeant man brought in his samples from your Mr. Battersby's clothing. He sent them for them, he said.
Right.
I checked about half of them. They don't match with the samples under her fingernails.
Oh, they don't.
Cheer up, Herbert. I've still got quite a lot to look at and compare. Oh, and hair doesn't match either. Sergeant Mann brought a sample of that. Nothing at all like it.
Well, I expected as much.
Just thought I'd let you know we're working and I'm wide awake. Or, I mean, I'm wide awake and we're working is better. Well, I'll ring you if I find anything.
Good, thank you. I'll be here. As I sat down the telephone, there was a knock on the door. Yes? Come in.
In here, miss. A civil person.
Thank you, Sergeant. It is the Inspector Case, n'est-ce pas?
I am the Inspector Case, yes, ma'am.
This is Mademoiselle Dupuis, sir.
Danielle Dupuis.
Oh. I'd like to ask you a few questions, please, Miss Dupuis.
The Sergeant Mann. Mann? L'homme. No, he has already asked me questions, monsieur.
What have you been asking her, man?
Oh, not about the case, sir.
He asked me, do I know Anne Battersby? Yes, I say, and I do not. She is dead. Oh, hélas, ma pauvre Annie.
You saw on the day she disappeared?
Oh, I see her two times. Twice? I see her twice, oui.
Twice?
Once, when she is about for to leave for the cinema. The Roxy, to see une lettre pour trois épouses. A letter for three wives. But I am making luncheon for me and my friend. And I am desolate. I cannot go with her. Oh!
What's the matter?
Oh! I just think if I go with her, I am dead too.
Oh, well, cheer up, Mr. Pui. You didn't go with us. Excuse me, sir.
So what did you do then, please, Mr. Pui?
I give her my lunch with my friend. Haricot vert.
She means green beans.
At what time?
Huh? Oh, 15 hours. Pourquoi?
Wait just a second. Put me through to Dr. Little at the forensic laboratory. Doctor.
Who is it?
Herbert Case.
Nothing new yet, Case.
Look, I found when Mrs. Battersby had her last meal.
You have? When?
At 3 o'clock on the 3rd.
You know what she ate?
Green beans, for one thing.
Good. That's what the report says. That settles it, then. She was killed between 6 and 7 o'clock on the 3rd. That all?
For now, thank you.
Bye.
And when was the other time you saw Mrs. Battersby that day, Miss Dupuis?
It was about just before 5 minutes to 6.
Where, Miss Dupuis?
Hold it, Sergeant. Are you sure of the time, Miss Dupuis?
I am always sure, Monsieur the Inspector, and it was on Edwards Lane, only just past the Roxy Cinema. And of that I am also certain.
Did you talk with her?
I did not. How am I to know who is this man she is talking with?
Man?
She is walking down the street, Edwards Lane, toward the old orchard, with a man, and he is talking to her.
Would you recognize this man again, Mr. Pui?
Oh, I am not sure I would know his face, for sure.
Did he have a lame leg?
How you know that?
Did he?
Oui.
I wish you had asked Mrs. Battersby to go with you.
But I could not, monsieur. I had a very important appointment. Why do you wish so?
Because I think you saw the man who murdered her about half an hour later. And that wasn't all that happened before the day was over. I turned Miss Dupuis over to the matron who applied cold cloth to her head. 50 minutes later, Marshbanks of the News of the World returned and came cheerfully into my office.
It's wonderful.
What's wonderful?
The story.
Brown's story? Is it written already?
I've got the first paragraph here, and as soon as we've looked it over, we're going over to the Black Boy Hotel. I have a room there, and he's going to finish it on my portable typewriter. Never traveled without the portable. Made in Switzerland, you know. Used by correspondents everywhere.
May I see the story?
Of course. Wonderful idea. He calls it, I Saw Something White. Isn't that a ripping title?
What's it mean?
Well, let me read it. As I slowly walked up the rustic path in the derelict orchard, I saw something white on the path before me. What could this be raced through my mind? I hurried forward and bent over the white object, and my heart almost stopped. It was the white face of a dead woman.
That's enough.
Eh?
Don't you want to hear the rest of it?
No, I want to hear the rest of it from Brown.
Oh, how fortunate. I asked him to wait for me in the anteroom.
Isn't it? Now, just a second. Sergeant Mann.
Yes, sir?
Get Miss Dupuy and ask her to come to the anteroom at once. Fetch her if she has any objections.
Yes, sir.
Miss Dupuy?
I think Mr. Brown has met her.
Oh, French, eh?
Come on, let's find Brown. Do you happen to have an extra 50 pounds on you, Mr. Marshbanks?
50 pounds?
I think you're going to owe it to Mr. Brown.
Eh?
Your proposition, you remember. Come along. Oh, there you are, Brown.
Oh, how do you do, Inspector? Have you been reading my story? The first paragraph, I mean.
I found it very interesting.
I like it very much indeed.
Well, thank you.
You said you saw her white face.
Well, I thought that it was rather a good touch.
It was, if you'd seen her face within an hour or two after you'd killed her.
What are you saying?
The combination of the blows she had received in the face and the strangling with her beads and the hot weather. Her face has been that ghastly black color since a few hours after she died. Mr. George Brown.
Black. Black, that's what I meant. Marchbanks.
Oh, here you are, Mr. Pui. Have you ever seen this man before?
Oh! It is he! It is the man with the limp! Yes, I have seen him! He is the man who did kill her!
And this time the warning was a trifle different from the first time. George Brown, I arrest you for the willful murder of Anne Battersby. I warn you that anything you say will be taken down in writing and may be used in evidence. This is a little of the testimony of George Brown at the Knotts Assizes, where he was tried for murder.
Yes, I killed her. No, there was no reason for it. No reason except I hate everyone. Everyone hates me and my crippled leg. I'm glad I thought so many times about a perfect crime. She laughed at me once as I dragged my way down Edwards Lane. I promised myself she'd be the first to die, and after I'd murder her, I'd seek out the others who laughed at the poor cripple. I saw her. I asked her to help me over the road in the rough orchard. She laughed and she said if I'd hurry. She didn't know she was going to die. I hate her. I hate you. I hate everybody. Perfect crime if I hadn't tried to make money for the races out of it. Should have been satisfied with her life, strangling the laughs and smiles out of her with her own paltry beads. I hate her. I hate her.
There was a great deal of that. He was found guilty, but they didn't hang him. He was sent to the asylum for the criminal insane at Broadmoor. He hanged himself 5 months later. Poor demented boy.
Heard on Whitehall 1212 today, Horace Braham as Inspector Case. Others in the order of their appearance were Harvey Hayes, Maurice Delamore, Carl Harbord, Lester Fletcher, Glenn Farmer, Gerard Burke, and Patricia Courtley. Lionel Rico speaking. Whitehall 1212 is written and directed by Willis Cooper. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.